Welcome into the Zoneheads podcast. I'm Brandon Kravitz, and today I am joined by one of the foremost minds in the fantasy industry, the one and only Jim Coventry from rotowire.com. Jim, you are truly one of the folks whose word is near gospel to me in the fantasy industry. Got a chance to meet you in person last year in Las Vegas for the RotoWire convention. How long have you been doing this? Let's kind of set the stage here before we get into the nuts and bolts of this year. How long have you been doing this? How did you get started? And of course, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I can't say I've been doing this since dinosaurs roamed the earth because the NFL wasn't around that long, but it's close. I've been doing this since 07. So it's been a long time. I've been playing the game since 94, but yeah, I became an analyst in 07. Spent 8 or so years with Draft Sharks, made the great move to come over to RotoWire since then. And it's just been a wonderful opportunity since. So yeah, I've been doing this forever, but thanks for having me on.
Yes, of course. 1994. Now, I wasn't quite playing. I started playing fantasy, I would say, about 8-9 years after that. And at that point, the internet had completely taken over. So it was very easy. Not as easy as it is today with cell phones, but it was at least easy. What was it like in 1994? Are you ripping through box scores in the newspaper and adding it all up yourself?
Yes, USA Today was the go-to, and we used, if anybody knows what a fax machine is, some people may not have any idea what that is. We would fax like league reports and standings and things like that. It was crazy, but yes, it was so archaic. Pen and paper and calculating those scores, and that was the way it was. So yeah, things have come a long, long way.
Wild. So we're still in early July here. Is it about time where you have to start kind of getting your fantasy mind cranked up? Now, I know for you, that's a 365-day-a-year thing, but for casual to avid fantasy football players, the gears kind of need to get going now before you get flooded with training camp and preseason noise. Does this feel like the right time?
There's always a different level of immersion as people move in. Like you said, the hardcore players are around. They're drafting even before the NFL draft. But yes, July 4th is that break point where people who are fairly serious about it are definitely coming in post July 4th. And definitely all analysts should have very solidified takes by that point in time if they hadn't had them earlier. And then August 1st is another point where people maybe just playing in one home league, people who just maybe do that, maybe around August 1st, they'll jump in the fray. But usually people who jump in now, they might be in a couple leagues, a few leagues, maybe even a lot more than that. But there's definitely a different level of it was immersion as people want to jump into the pool.
Are you surprised that I think RotoWire is in this bucket as well of companies that specialize in fantasy that have moved away from magazines? Now, I know, look, online is, I don't need to sell anybody listening to this, because you're listening to this online, how important that aspect of the business or any business is. But there's just something special while holding that magazine in your hand. And I used to be able to buy mine. I go on a family vacation every June to the beach, and I would always get my fantasy magazine mid-June. You can't even find them on the shelves then. It's hard to find them on the shelves come July.
Yeah, the biggest problem is there is so much information and things change so fast. So now it's like holding off for those that do publish magazines till the latest possible date. Because at that point, yes, things are going to change, but they're going to change a little bit less. So those that publish, like I said, you'll see some in right on now, maybe close to mid-July, but those numbers have gone way, way, way down. A lot of companies have gone to just an online version of a magazine because you can make changes. And so you're right, the print magazine was always great to have in your hand. But man, my rankings will have micro changes to them every couple of days. A little micro change here and there. A possible receiver moving from a 4 spot, a little heavier competition for the wide receiver 3 spot. And all of a sudden, I have to move that player up a bit. And in a magazine, you could never account for that.
Right. Yeah. I think it's one of those things, like it just gives you a nice baseline, but anybody going in that purchases that has to understand that there are going to be changes. So it's more, I think in the past it was, you could do all your prep via magazine. Now it's just, I'm just trying not to get my phone wet when I'm at the beach. But let's move on. I started a slow draft the other day on Underdog. Still in round five, by the way. I think sometimes, a quick sidebar, slow drafts are too slow. Would you agree or disagree with that, Jim?
If I wasn't forced to be in some, because there are certain like charitable organizations I'm involved with the drafts that have to be slow drafts, I would never do a slow draft again. Now, I know Scott Fish talked about this concept that could be on the horizon where people get 8 hours for the entire draft when they're on the clock. So if you use 1 minute this time, you're down to 7 hours, 59 minutes for all your remaining picks. If you use up your 8 hours on one pick, you have no timer on the rest. So you have to auto pick them. It would be great if it went that way, because I get it. People have to work and people have different things going on. And so the slow draft makes sense, but it is painful to go 2 weeks, 3 weeks and keep checking back and just not wanting to miss your turn. So I'm not a fan of slow drafts, and I just wish there's a better way, like Scott Fish's idea. If that comes to fruition, I'll be a lot happier with them.
Yeah, because I think a lot of us, like I want to be able to get an idea of how I want to craft a team, but I work a lot of hours, so it's hard to dedicate the time needed where I'm on the clock for 30 seconds. I need something that expands beyond that, but we're talking about 8 hours, and some people, my God, I don't know what these people are doing every day. They spend all 8 hours trying to figure out that pick, but enough bitching about that for now. Like I mentioned, still, I just actually made my round five pick. It was Mark Andrews, by the way, but I wanted to use some of those items as sort of a jumping off point to talk about rankings and specific players and draft conundrums that are out there. The first five picks in this draft were Christian McCaffrey, CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, and Ja'Marr Chase. That feels pretty standard to me. It feels like also you really want a top five pick this year. Do those sound like the right five guys to you? And do you think there's a drop off after that?
That is the standard five. So it's very hard to dispute that. There are people that are a little bit nervous with Justin Jefferson because of the potential for quarterback play. Sam Darnold is possibly going to be a longer term starter over JJ McCarthy. Greg Cosell, who was once with NFL Films, I think he may still be, but he's one that I always listen to. And he says, based on what he's heard from Minnesota, McCarthy's a project. He's not ready. And we've seen Sam Darnold. He might have two or three good games. So Jefferson is a little bit problematic, but here's what I want to give people a little bit of comfort. Last year, in the last four games, Jefferson played with a backup quarterback. He averaged 7.5 catches, 119 yards, and a half a touchdown. That's well over 1,600 yards. So he did that with Nick Mullins. So that said, Jefferson, if you're going to take him in top five, at least there's that. But there are some people that might bounce Jefferson out of the top five and maybe move Breece Hall in. That might be a player to move in, or even Bijan if somebody likes him better. But that is the consensus five.
Have you done any work on Sam Darnold's ability to support a number one option? And I tend to agree with the numbers that you put out, kind of indisputable. Justin Jefferson is so good. He's one of those rare quarterback-proof quarterbacks, but I maybe it's because his options were so bad. I can't remember loving a Sam Darnold weapon in the past.
So Sam Darnold's with the Jets for a while. We remember when he was seeing ghosts against the Patriots and Bill Belichick sent players from all over. And that was kind of the story of him. But he was on a really bad Jets team. And then he played with the Panthers and he had a few games there, but that whole cupboard was bare. So I don't think much of Sam Darnold as an NFL quarterback, but I will say he has been in some rotten situations. And this is a situation, they'll have Aaron Jones running in the backfield. That'll help. The offensive line is good. Jefferson will be not only able to get open on his own instantaneously, but it'll be schemed open by Kevin O'Connell, which is a double, like Brandon Ayuk gets that double benefit. You can get open, but your coach gets you open too. And quick throws. And Darnold should, in theory, be able to make quick throws because pressure doesn't have a chance to get to him. And with the line, the tackles are very good. And so that gives Darnold the potential to just jam the ball into Jefferson as much as he can. Add Jordan Addison, I'd be a little more worried about, because those might be a little the second option, the second read, slower developing. And I worry about Darnold then, But again, TJ Hockenson, we're not going to see him much this year. He didn't have his surgery on his knee till late January. So even the tight end, he's going to be out till probably at least Halloween. So Jefferson's going to get a, he'll probably gets 160 targets by default. And I know we saw Davante Adams on 178 targets last year, only put up 1,100 yards. But I think Darnold is probably better than what Aiden O'Connell was for Adams last year. So I do think, look, I don't think we're going to get that 1,800 yard Jefferson, but I think you can safely say he'll get 1,400 yard, which is his rookie year number. And if you're going to get a 1,400 yard receiver, I think you could still live with that.
Yeah. And the Kevin O'Connell aspect, the Raiders don't have a coach like that that's scheming guys open. Puka Nacua went round one in the draft that I'm doing, and it is still jarring to me to see Puka drafted so far ahead of Cooper Kupp. He went 24 picks ahead of where Cooper Kupp went, but I get it. Puka is younger. He was way more productive last year. He's way more healthy last year. Are you buying the year two continuation of what we saw from Puka Nacua?
I'm worried. And I'll say this first of all. Sean McVay, if somebody didn't think he was a genius before last year, there's no more questioning that. Kyren Williams looked like an ordinary at best talent, and Kyren Williams was going off every week. Puka Nacua was a sixth-round draft pick, slow, one of the worst like testings you'll see, and he puts up 1,400 yards, the most yards by a rookie receiver ever. And so it's McVay. Puka Nacua, if he was on 31 other teams, I don't think he cracks 400 yards on any other team. Not even close. But McVay, again, schemes you open immediately. And Nacua is a perfect fit for that. So if you're drafting Nacua, there's a couple things I want you to think about. And you could draft him in the first round. The numbers supported it from last year. First of all, he's very dependent upon that system. I don't think he can create outside of it. If Matthew Stafford, who is brittle over time, if he goes down at all, that whole offense is going to crater because nobody can run it. Like Stafford throws the ball before the coverage is set. So that'll be gone. If the talk about Cooper Kupp is true, that he was truly not healthy all year, Stafford is going to lean on Kupp more heavily because Kupp has a 1,947 yard season with him. So if Kupp truly wasn't healthy, which I'm skeptical, he's aging, but if that's the case. And then the other thing was Nacua takes on way too much contact. There were so many times he was like knocked to the ground, lays down a couple minutes. This year, there's no guarantee he gets up from that. The more hits you take and you're putting yourself out there. So he plays a dangerous style. It could all work out again, but he's going to need all those factors to drop for him to maintain what he did last year.
That sounds like a guy you'd be way more comfortable taking in round two. You don't want him to be your first pick.
100%.
Yeah. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a polarizing rookie. I'm sure you've already spent a lot of time talking about him at this point. And I know that I can't be alone in thinking that he is way too hyped. I loved him in college, but I'm seeing him as an early round two pick for a rookie and what I would consider a subpar offense. Are you in or out on Marvin Harrison Jr. at the current price?
Here's the thing. If you take the scope of NFL history, you would say taking a wide receiver as a rookie that early would be foolish. But if you just took the last 4 years, Justin Jefferson had 1,400 yards. Ja'Marr Chase had 1,455. And Puka Nacua had 1,460-ish or something. So 3 times in the last 4 years, the rookie receiver, a rookie receiver, had 1,400 yards. You could make the case that Marvin Harrison's better than all of them. Maybe. Ja'Marr Chase, maybe not. But they're close. From a pure scouting standpoint, I don't think that Chase or Jefferson is considered that much better than Harrison coming in. And Harrison is in one of those situations. Yeah, he was drafted high, but Kyler Murray's a good quarterback. So he didn't go into a garbage situation. And obviously Chase had Burrow and Jefferson had Kirk Cousins. And then Stafford or Nacua. So it's kind of similar. So you can make the case that, well, that's been the norm for rookie top picks. And, you know, the NFL, Nacua wasn't top pick, but the other two were. That said, there are other players I like a little bit better than Harrison, and he's going within 15 picks of most drafts. And so at that point, I'm gonna go Drake London at that point. I like him a little bit better, and he's going after. But if somebody's in on Harrison, recent history at least backs you and says you could get a 1,400-yard season out of your rookie.
It definitely says you can get that out of a rookie. Is he the right rookie to get that out of? Because there are a lot of really good wide receivers that got drafted in this year's class. Roma Dunze, you know, he's a crowded wide receiving core. in Chicago, but somebody could separate themselves. Keenan Allen's not getting any younger, and DJ Moore has a ceiling. Malik Nabers, number one guy for a quarterback that's not totally incompetent, and Daniel Jones. Is there another guy? Now, Marvin Harrison's going to be ranked above those guys, but is there somebody else that you say, you know, a more sneaky pick that could be that candidate, that rookie wide receiver that goes off?
So I don't think anybody goes off to the level where he would say, like, they're going to have the Puka Nacua season. You can make a case for a number of receivers having very good years who are drafted later. I think about somebody like Keon Coleman. Not the greatest prospect profile, but a bigger bodied possession receiver. And they look outside of Dalton Kincaid, the tight end, they got Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, really, really small guys. They've got some situational deep threats on the outside. They need a possession receiver, and Josh Allen's going to throw the ball. So somebody like Keon Coleman, you're not going to get 1,400 yards out of him, but where you're drafting him, which is you're probably getting him in the 10th round of 12-team leagues, you could get 1,050 yards, 8 touchdowns. That's squarely in play. So it's a player like that who I will definitely consider later because I think there's value there. And again, you're hitching yourself to a very, very high-end quarterback, and that always helps.
So old face, new place. We've got a few running backs that fit the bill here that I'm excited about all of them in their own right. Saquon Barkley to the Eagles, Derrick Henry to the Baltimore Ravens, Josh Jacobs to the Green Bay Packers. And I know we have a few others, but those seem like the most hand in glove fit for where they're at in their careers and the offenses that they are entering. Do you want to throw any cold water on any of those? Or are you pretty jacked up about Barkley, Henry, and Jacobs?
Jacobs is the one who worries me. He had the year where the Raiders turned down his fifth-year option, and he had the career year. It was like 5 yards a carry. His touches were through the roof as a runner and receiver, and he was right at the top of the rock in running back scoring. But if you take the 3 years that surround that career year when he was playing angry and you could tell he was training for a contract, he's barely 4 yards a carry, which is league ordinary. His broken tackle rate, well below average. Yards after contact was almost average last year. Very ordinary back. And now he goes to Green Bay. And they're like, well, Green Bay paid him. Yeah, I get it. Green Bay had Aaron Jones when Jones was young. And Jones always gave up work to far less talented backs. It's an organizational philosophy they've gone with. And then the Packers popped the 88th overall pick on Marshawn Lloyd. That's not a throwaway pick. That is a very strong investment in a running back. So to me, their organizational history and their organizational move tells me this is the same committee Aaron Jones was in. So you're not getting bell cow work. And Josh Jacobs, again, good receiver, good at the goal line, but ordinary 4 yard per carry runner. And the line in Las Vegas is very underrated. They were a good run blocking line. Zamir White actually played better behind that line in a small sample than Jacobs did all year last year. So I think Josh Jacobs is going to get volume, and that'll a little bit of volume will at least be helpful. But in reality, I don't think he's close to an RB1.
This could be one of the tougher conundrums that anybody faces on draft day. How do you differentiate between three Texans wide receivers that it's hard not to love all of these guys? And you can, but you have to come up with some sort of system for who you like better because there's going to be a point in the draft where they're all available. Nico Collins put together a breakout year. Stephon Diggs is that old face, new place, still very talented wideout. And Tank Dell, who might be better than all of them. So how do you separate those three guys?
Nico Collins is a perfect fit for Bobby Slowick's offense. That offense is predicated on getting a wide receiver horizontal, but more of a diagonal, more like diagonal to get you open quickly and into space. And also those are over the top and underneath. And Nico Collins is a master at running those routes, and his run after the catch ability skills are exceptional. And so Collins is the perfect player for the scheme. He is the clear number one. But the problem is with Collins, he's missed significant time in each of his first 3 years in the league. That's a track record already. And so there's that. If he's going to miss 4 or 5 games, that's problematic for a player you're going to pop a draft pick at. Stephon Diggs he's not going to get the 160 targets that he got in Buffalo. 100 is going to be high end, because even Collins last year, 109 targets, and he missed a couple games. But this is not a high volume passing attack. Again, this offense comes from the 49ers tree. They are going to run the ball. They brought in Mixon. They're going to run some. And how many targets are there? Now, so Diggs is going to probably be second in targets, because you get him ticked off, he's going to whine and cause cancer on the team. You don't want that. And then Dell, like you said, he can get behind a defense, and he's going to have the ability to have good coverage, because defenses have to worry about Collins and Diggs. So when they go to Dell, it may not be the targets we'd like to see, but he's going to be probably very efficient on those targets. There just won't be the high floor weeks. If he doesn't cash in on those bigger plays, it could be a problem. Remember, Dell started the season last year averaging like 5.5 targets a game. His last four games, he went up to 10 per game. Well, now with Diggs in the mix, I think we're back to that 5 targets a game. So that really, so it's tough to draft them. If you're going to take the risk on injury, though, Collins could go through the roof.
Interesting. Yeah. If one of those guys, you draft someone, one of the guys that doesn't get hurt in that trio, and you're in the money, but you might need an injury. Last thing for you, and then I'll cut you loose. Last year in Vegas, you were the guy that sold me on Anthony Richardson. Now the community is back in on him. He's a top 6 consensus fantasy quarterback. Are you back in on Anthony Richardson after the injury that he sustained in his rookie season?
And it wasn't just the injury. 4 starts, he didn't finish 3 games. Concussion ones, I may have been 2 actually, but and then the shoulder injury. So what do we do with that? I mean, that's
yeah. And that was his track record in college too.
So here's what I'm telling people. We saw in the games he played, he had like 25 points, 27 points. There was a game he played 18 snaps and he had 17 fantasy points. So his scoring could be through the roof. I think if you're drafting Richardson as your quarterback 6, you normally don't want to take a second quarterback if you draft a quarterback high. I think you have to. I think if you take Richardson, fine. But then you've got to go in like quarterback 14 and go a little bit ahead and get Kirk Cousins. Just back him up with somebody who can at least get you scoring, who's a fantasy reserve. Cousins is the player I'm identifying as that second quarterback when I have to have one, because Cousins on average goes as quarterback 18. I think you bump him up to 14 in that new offense with the weapons he has, and that works. But I would not treat Anthony Richardson like with Mahomes and Allen, where you draft them and you don't draft another quarterback. You've got to protect your investment. That would be my recommendation.
At Jim Coventry NFL, go ahead and throw him a follow on Twitter. Always pumping out great stuff, especially during the NFL season. Full breakdowns, analytics, and just a better understanding of these fantasy options that you end up investing in. RotoWire.com is where you can read all of his stuff as well. And SiriusXM if you want to hear more of his beautiful voice. Thanks so much, Jim. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, Brandon. Have a good day.